Good morning. The next matter before the court this morning is a matter of the discipline of Gwendolyn Lapreth, attorney at law for the disciplinary board. Appears Mr. Robert Freeburg from Beresford, and Ms. Lapreth, you're appearing on your own behalf. Is that correct? All right. Justice Zinner has disqualified himself from this matter, and the court has appointed the Honorable Robert A. Miller, former justice of this court, to sit in Justice Zinner's place. Mr. Freeburg, you may proceed, sir.
May it please the court, Ms. Lapreth. As the court knows, this case comes here with a recommendation from the disciplinary board that the respondent be disbarred. The board, of course, does not take that recommendation lightly. It is probably the hardest decision that the board has to make a recommendation that someone be disbarred. On the other hand, the evidence in this case is almost overwhelming. The respondent has violated, I think there are 18 separate conclusions in the referee's findings, which are consistent with what the board initially found in its first recommendation to this court. It covers just the whole gamut of what a lawyer ought to be able to do, and unfortunately, Ms. Lapreth lacks the ability to do hardly any of those things. In these proceedings, which have been somewhat protracted, I think it was in December of 2001 when the board first had a hearing dealing with Ms. Lapreth. The referee's hearing was in January of this year. And it seemed remarkable, to me at least, that over that period of 1 year, knowing that the board was concerned about inability to comply with the trust account rules, that the board was concerned about a lack of comprehension about procedures and guardianship matters, that the board was concerned with a lack of understanding about the rules of professional conduct which govern lawyers, there had been no apparent attempt to rectify or remedy the shortcomings in Ms. Lapreth's conduct. As one reviews the transcripts over the process of the three hearings that were conducted, there's this continual sense that I don't understand. If you'll tell me how to do it, I'll do it. I can't understand these statutes. The rules are too complicated. It just becomes overwhelming after a while that this person just does not have the basic competency to continue to practice law. In our brief to the referee, we tried to point out under the ABA standards some of the factors that you would consider for imposing discipline, and also factors that are considered in mitigation. Unfortunately, none of the factors for mitigation are going to be applicable. There was nothing in that entire list of mitigating factors that were applicable to this respondent's conduct. In other words, there was no reason to mitigate. With respect to the imposition of the lawyer discipline, this court, as well as courts throughout the country, have for a long time had the basic premise of lawyer discipline is to protect the public. In this instance, it is the board's firm conviction and recommendation that Ms. Lapreth be disbarred because she is a danger to the public. The public is not well served by what she does. I think these folks whom she represents, it's just difficult to imagine what has happened to their own circumstances. And in the testimony before the referee, as you well know, there were four experienced jurists presently serving in the state of South Dakota who each said, this person is not competent to continue to practice law. And I think that, I can't remember the exact words, but to paraphrase at least, that one of them said, whenever she shows up, it's just a mess. And you know, I feel like I'm pouring coals on a fire that's burning, and I just want to emphasize to the court that the board has taken this matter very seriously. It's just an egregious case, and we think that its recommendation ought to be sustained. And obviously, the referee, after long and careful consideration of this rather voluminous record, reached exactly the same conclusion. And with that, I'd be glad to answer any questions, Your Honor.
Any questions for Mr. Freeberg?
Will the State Bar Security account come in to adjust the damages that people have sustained as a result of those guardianships when that one estate matter where there was a borrowing of $5,500?
If a claim was made, perhaps a client security fund would address that. I'm not sure that it raises the level of defalcation. There may be a question about that, Your Honor, but yes, certainly a claim could be filed there, and the board then would have to consider that. It may sound more in malpractice rather than that, but I agree with you, it's a close question in that case. I mean, that's where she took the client to the bank and got the money and took it, if that's the one you're referring to.
Yes.
Right, I agree.
Any further questions for Mr. Freeberg from the court? No, thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Ms. Lapworth, you have 20 minutes.
Good morning, sirs, and Mrs. Meyer Henry. I am the first woman to do trials in Tripp County, and I did my first trial in front of Judge Miller. I am the first woman to do trials in Tripp County, the first woman to do trials in Todd County. And through these disciplinary proceedings, I would also submit I'm the first woman to have cross-examined three circuit judges and a justice of the Supreme Court in one day. I am humiliated. I am humbled to be here. I never dreamed that I would be here at finally attaining my first oral argument to defend myself in a disciplinary hearing. I don't believe that I have tremendously upset. I've spent hours searching my actions. I'm ready to agree to any direction the court would have for me. I have a differing opinion than what Mr. Freeberg tells you, and I think, or I ask you here today, to look at my actions and apply the law. As we went through each of these proceedings below, I argued and briefed each of these matters, and the Bar Disciplinary Board did not brief those actions, they briefed them, but there was no authority in their citations. They were opinions by Mr. Freeberg. And as I come here for you today, I ask you to just look at my actions and apply the law. An attorney who represents an incompetent client must or is protected by the ethics rules insofar as the preamble itself sets out that anybody who represents an incompetent client cannot be the subject of a disciplinary bar proceeding, and yet I'm here today. Then If I were to prevail in that argument, it brings me to the 2 points of the sales tax and the issue of the client trust fund. And as I was doing my briefing and reviewing today, I see that in a sales tax matter, that another attorney, similar to my situation, was late in filing returns. And that's set out in the dissent in Dorothy, and it's found in the disciplinary of a Kallenberger, Kallenberger, found at 493 Northwest 2nd, 709, South Dakota in 1992. His sales tax returns were filed habitually late over a period of time, and he got public censure. He was not disbarred. Prior to representing Tom Lapreth, the incompetent I spoke of, I filed sales tax returns in a timely manner, and I always had a credit balance. I did that because, having gone through a divorce in 91, I was not given any assets or any cash in the divorce. And from then on, I wasn't really able to maintain a checking account. That has a bearing only upon the fact that I couldn't maintain a client trust fund account at my bank. The bank, for whatever reason, is also the bank of a large law firm in my town, but they, even this last year, have offset various charges off of that account improperly, although it's labeled client trust fund account. I don't know if the status of the banks or the understanding of the banks is not such that they understand that law. I have visited with the head banker 3 times now this year, and I think the situation is resolved, but that already, in the interim, has led to a complaint against me by the local state's attorney, who belongs to the other large bar firm, or because there was a check that was alleged to have been insufficient funds check, but the bank had offset other costs against that account that weren't proper, and that firm filed a complaint against me, although it was a bank error. As I come here today, there are major questions that I'm sure the court has of me about why the client trust fund account wasn't maintained in the manner that the court now sees as acceptable, or why the sales tax wasn't paid in a timely manner. I took care of an incompetent individual who happened to be my ex-husband. He asked me to perform that service. His doctor of rehabilitation asked me to do that. The Social Security representative at Huron, Wayne Bitterman, called up and asked me to be Tom's representative payee. He also told me that I could determine my own attorney fees that are paid out of that account. When the referee says that a fee petition should have been filed, that is inaccurate law he's presenting to you, and he presents no authority for that point of law. The Huron office representative told me that it was my call, and you will see in the pamphlet that I put into the evidence that a representative payee may buy a home, not only make a down payment, but buy a home for the individual that they're taking care of. They may also buy a car, and often that provider is also a provider of groceries or mental health services. They may pay their own bill for those services they are giving to the incompetent client. Tom Lapreth, since the filing of the guardianship, which he successfully resisted, has lost and wasted an additional $150,000. That's lost in this whole matter. Nobody cares about that because nobody speaks up for him. A guardianship, under the ethics rules, was properly sought by me. I would refer you to those sections.
What evidence is there in the record that he has lost, his estate has lost $150,000?
I testified to that at my trial before the referee.
Is there any evidence to document that other than that, your statement?
His assets are filed. His list of assets are filed along with the guardianship. That file's made a part of this matter. And you may see that he had substantial assets at the time of the filing of the guardianship. And you have only my word for it that they're no longer there except for 1/4 of land, which he is now contemplating selling. Our 15-year-old said to him 2 days ago, "You don't need to buy any more things, Dad." He said, "I know it, but I can't help myself."
Do you see an inherent conflict of interest in representing somebody who you had to personally sue, or he sued you, or I don't know what, for a divorce? I mean, doesn't that have carry with it a built-in conflict to then later go back and say, "Okay, I'm now going to assume the responsibility for your care that I refused to do because I divorced you"?
The divorce was 10 years prior.
All right.
All of the child support, or all of the child custody guidelines that the Sixth Circuit I practice in, they've now been adopted by the state, this court, they encourage parents to work together, to share Christmas holiday meals together. I did that. I gave him...
I'm not referring to your children. I'm referring to your ex-husband.
Yes.
Do you see an inherent conflict of interest in attempting to represent him in a guardianship when you've divorced him?
When I was his caretaker for the 2.5 years preceding the guardianship, I was his attorney as well, and I was his attorney before the plane crash. I believe that that overcomes whatever conflict that you suspect ex-wives have. In today's modern age, ex-wives and ex-husbands do get along for the sake of the family. In the motion to dismiss and the motion for recommendation, I've set out the law that pertains to the handling of an incompetent client. And in those ethics rules, you will see that the attorney is encouraged to seek a guardianship for the incompetent individual. And I believe that I can rely upon that, as well as the preamble, which says that the attorney who handles a matter involving an incompetent can't be the subject of a disciplinary proceeding. During the time that I did care for him, during that 2.5 years, as a matter of mitigation, I did care for him well, took him to the doctor many times. He had 17 providers for medical care, including physicians, hospitals, x-ray folks, and I got his huge bill reduced by 30% to 40%. I helped him sell property that he had inherited in Montana to pay down those bills until he still had a remaining huge estate of at least $250,000. There was a circle of his oldest friend. Our oldest child was 19, and his brothers and myself, who cared for him and consulted with each other about his care. They are all in agreement with me. They are not in here yelling and screaming at my behavior. Those people have viewed my actions firsthand, and they're not complaining about the ex-wife out to get the husband's property. That is a boogeyman that Mr. Johnson raised, and it continues to this day without any evidence of my having done that. I came here today to point out to the court the two cases that I have done in front of the court in the last couple of years, Tiemann versus Bowman in 2001, and that involved Judge Wilbur, who did testify at the referee's hearing. And I am the attorney that defended the Easter egg case, where the little 11-year-old went into Pomida and shoplifted a Cadbury cream egg for 79 cents. And the local judge and the other attorneys had defended 10 cases similar to that. Mine was the 11th. And all of those people, even shoplifting cigarettes and a piece of meat, were found guilty of burglary. I appealed that, saying that it was petty theft, and the court agreed with me, saying the law must make sense. I think as you work through this today, as you look through the record that's before you, I think that when the law is applied, you will see that my actions, they do make sense, they make common sense. I've not dissipated Mr. Lapras' estate. I've not stolen my client's money. There are no unearned fees. In the Layton estate, the court asked if there was a chance that the client trust fund that the security that backs the client trust fund might be attached. But in that case, I have given over $5,280 in attorney fees, and I have given an additional $3,000 that will never be collected, and I've written those off. Those people are not out money. I discuss with my clients the fees in detail. I discuss them as they go along. They're fully aware of where their money is going and how it is being spent, and that's why you don't have a client, pardon me, in here complaining. You did have three circuit judges and a justice appear at my trial. I would ask you to look at each one of their testimonies very carefully. One of them said, and I have practiced in front of her for 9 years, that I'm incompetent because of one case where I advertised in an adoption. The second judge said that I was incompetent because a hearing for a change of venue that wasn't moved to Hughes County, and she did give me a court date for that case. And the third judge I hadn't appeared in front of for 6 years, but he was arguing about a case that was 12 years old, and that case had been before the Supreme Court. This court had said that my actions there, pardon me, were not in error, were harmless error. But a federal judge reviewing that same point of law released the individual that was convicted from custody, overturned the case. I submit to you that in the matter of the appeal of Schramm at 414 Northwest 2nd 31 South Dakota 1987, those judges did not have the expertise to testify about me. And only after Judge Gores testified did I learn that he had been in the courthouse with Mr. Freeburg and the sheriff going through the Register of Deeds office rather vocally, laughing and cracking and making jokes about me. And I'm sure that Judge Gores didn't disclose that to the referee at the time he testified to my competency. I found that offensive and probably a breach of the ethics rules. The judicial opinions of the witnesses cannot legally be the basis of findings of incompetence, tardiness, incompetency in pleadings and procedures and the findings. Based upon that case. In that case, Mr. Schramm was a local dentist at Winter, and the other dentist in the area testified against him before this court that he was entirely incompetent. And the court said, you must present an expert to testify to that.
Wouldn't these judges be experts?
They're not considered by this court to be experts. They must be experts in malpractice. And that's what this court's decision says in the matter of Schramm. Also in the matter of Voorhees, 294 Northwest 2nd, 646 South Dakota in 1980, expert testimony would be necessary for the commission of acts which are blatantly illegal or improper, such as charging for work not done or overbilling at outrageous fees, forgery, personal conversion of client trust funds. No expert has appeared and testified against me. There was never even an audit of my client trust fund accounts. My client trust fund accounts.
I didn't think you had one.
Correct. In the last year, prior to the investigation, I pass all of any payments to me for accounts receivable or attorney fees through a checking account, a savings account, and I did not, what I would do is take a retainer of $300 to $500, and that same sitting where I was with the client, I spent an hour and a half to 2 hours at $100 an hour. I would have earned $150 to $200 at that point. Within that same week, usually within a three-day period, I did the rest of the work, and I had earned my $300 to $500. The problem with the disciplinary board, the problem with my following the law, they say, is that I didn't do the bill the same day that the money came into my hands as a personal, private person. And the ethics, the client trust fund statute doesn't say I must do that. As far as my client and I were concerned, that happened. The money was earned, but not, there was no bill done till after the, at the end of the service being rendered, so I knew how many hours had been worked. And that's what they find great fault with. And it's my position that that took place each time on each of those incidents, except for the Leighton estate, and there was one matter right before that where the individual put down $1,500. I admit that. Why did I do that? I see that the case law talks about foolishness, negligence. I don't consider myself a foolish individual. I can prepare and file successfully. I have twice a special use tax return for those large farmers that have farmed on their inherited property for 8 years. That's a very difficult, complex piece of tax work. I can do that successfully. I've been reviewed by the IRS. They told me, go ahead and do the second one. The first one was well done. But somehow or other, I didn't get how important the client trust fund was. Whether that be my foolishness, my ignorance, I doubt if it's my ignorance. I'm not ignorant, I beg your pardon. Is it negligence? I can't answer that. I sit down in a rural area. I'm the only attorney for the most part that will even file a domestic abuse protective order for women. I spend a lot of my time doing that. I work with divorce files. My pleadings, my paperwork, if you would review them, I submit to you, they are very passable. They are good. There is no fault there. And I cannot explain to you why my brain, why my readings didn't cover the client trust fund. But in arguing this to the board, I would ask you to take judicial notice that thereafter they produced and had a CLE, and they call it How to Do It Right. I submit to you that if they didn't believe half of what I said or three quarters of it, they never would have had the CLE on June 18th of 2003, I'm sorry. And I have this, I don't know if it can be made an exhibit or just ask the court to take judicial notice of it. In the back, it has some very, some rules that are very, my notes are in it, I'll also add, and that would probably not be a good exhibit to make with a court. I have 14 seconds left. In here are the rules that I talk about. Accounts receivable, don't pass through that account. I didn't know that. Where do I know that? It's not in statute. It also says that you will do the bill contemporaneous. I didn't know that.
All right, now, your time has expired, but I'm going to allow you I'll allow you 2 minutes to summarize your position because you've been talking detail here, and I think you maybe want to bring it all together, and I'll give you 2 minutes to summarize what your position is to the court.
Thank you.
Clerk can put down 2 minutes.
All right.
Go ahead.
An attorney, as it comes before this honored court, must be contrite. I don't know how to display contrite to you, but I feel I am contrite. If I could have done this differently and not come here today and not been the subject of this inspection investigation, I would have done that. I'm very capable of doing that. The other point I want to make to you is that in all of this authority that I have cited to you, including Claggett, the attorney doesn't, those men attorneys don't lose their license for those things that I am accused of having done. They get letters of private reprimand. They get public censure. And only even Dorothy, who had practiced 25 years, I've practiced 20, he got a letter of reprimand, and he overcharged some client $47,000 for a divorce. I haven't done those egregious actions. I've committed more than a faux pas, but it can be remedied. And if the court would look at my exhibits that were put in the referee's hearing, the court will see that I had changed my client trust fund accounting practices, and I had even done that as early as January, and I would beg to differ with Mr. Friedberg when he says I had not moved to mitigate matters. The record should be full of that. Thank you for your time today.
Thank you, Ms. Lappert.
Can the court give me an idea of how much time I have for a decision?
No, there's a voluminous record in this case. We have studied it to some extent, but we also have many other matters, and so I guess that's a long way of saying we'll get to it as soon as possible. Mr. Freeberg.
May it please the court, I will just say two things. One is that as you look in the record in this matter, if you look at the referee's proceeding, the transcript of that, and you get to about page 321 and some pages thereafter. Remember, this is a year after our first encounter, in terms of the board's encounter with Ms. Lapworth. And I read this last night to see if she was to explain to the referee how she ran her trust account that she said she had established. And frankly, I didn't understand it then, and I read it again, and I didn't understand it, and I'd invite you to read that, because I think it would be instructive about her ability to comprehend how a trust account is to be operated. The second thing that I would say, and perhaps doesn't need to be said here, but I think in view of the frequency with which Ms. Lapworth has suggested that she is somehow a victim in all of this, because she's a woman, because men didn't get treated the same way, because she didn't understand what was going on, is all an unfair aspersion against the work of the board, against the work that that we do in trying to address this situation. I think it's plain in this record that the board has been very careful to try to see that Ms. Lapworth has had every benefit to explain her position, to defend her position, and yes, to correct the deficiencies that she has displayed, and she's failed to do any of that. And with that, I would just urge the board to adopt the finding of the board and of the referee. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Freeberg. The report will be in recess.